Hey everyone, Maya from Proud Stutter. You may have noticed that I haven't been as consistent with releasing new episodes. Things are super crazy busy over here. Just really have been focused on making the film recently. And so I decided as we close out the year, we'll be revisiting some of our favorite episodes from the past 4 years of Proud Stutter. I still can't believe it's been that long. So we'll be revisiting stories that, you know, a lot of our listeners have told me they really enjoyed and really made an impact on them. So yeah, that will be what's up ahead. Season 3 will launch in early 2026, and I can't wait to share season 3 with you guys. It's going to be incredible. And last thing, if you love the show and you use it a lot, you listen, you've been sharing it, please consider becoming a monthly donor or making a one-time gift. We really, really need it right now to keep the show going. So you can make that gift of either monthly or one time by visiting proudstutter.org. And there's a big donate button at the top of the website. And I'll also include the link in our show notes. And if you can't give right now, totally get it. Sharing the podcast with a friend, or even better, writing a quick review makes a huge difference too. Thank you all for being such a big part of the podcast. I really couldn't do it without you. And without further ado, here is an episode that I personally really love, and we've been getting a lot of listeners also saying they love it too. So enjoy. I'm Maya Chupkov, and I'm a woman who stutters. Welcome to Proud Stutter, a show about stuttering and embracing verbal diversity in an effort to change how we talk about it, one conversation at a time. Talia and Benedict, welcome both of you to Proud Stutter. I am so excited to have you both here.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to be here.
Talia, we're going to start with you. So we spoke a little bit before recording about how you collaborate with Benedict when you present with him on stage, and how you model behavior for people who may never have heard stuttering like a lot of your audiences. I'm not sure if you realize this, but I see you as really like what we had talked about before recording. Like you have this amazing way of showing how to be an advocate and ally to the stuttering community. So I would love it if you can share some of your tips and how to be a thoughtful conversation partner with a person who stutters. And what advice would you give about being a good ally to a loved one who stutters?
Well, it didn't actually occur to me that I was an advocate for stutterers, or for my husband, until we actually started working together as clinicians. So where we would have to stand up in front of people who were paying us to come to them and teach them and help them to get better at the craft that that we practice, which is choral singing. And there would always be a moment where, as we stood up in front of the new crowd together, we would introduce ourselves. And Benedict was very good at disarming the crowds that he spoke to with, has always been good at that, frankly, probably even when you were a teenager, with some humor. And so it occurred to me as we were doing this, the more we did this, it occurred to me that people would look at me when he was talking. And I realized that I was modeling for these people how to listen through and around his stutter. And it became something that I tried to do very deliberately in our co-teaching and co-presenting. I do actually have three, I think, insights that come from the work that we do, which was working with people vocalizing in a way that a lot of people find very, very challenging. There are lots of adults who, I mean, let alone teenagers, but there are lots of adults who don't feel like they can sing. So I thought I would share three insights that I've used with my vocal students to help them navigate that sense of uncertainty and fear that really does create a physical response in them. And it's part of why people, I think, are reluctant to try to vocalize in that way, because there's a physiological response. Fear shuts down the mechanisms that that create ease in singing. So as a vocal coach who's trying to encourage people and leave space for people to vocalize in a way that makes them emotionally and physically uncomfortable, I kind of maybe do a similar thing around the stuttering. So I'll just share those three. I'll share these three ideas with you, and I would love to know what you might think about that, and Benedict, what you think about that, because I didn't actually tell him what these were either.
Love it.
So the first thing that I like to tell people when they're working with new singers or they're working with people who haven't had a lot of experience with singing is this fundamental psychological reality that fear is our primary psychological state. And I call this fear is first. In the discipline of psychology, it was a little like they kind of got it wrong for a while doing research with lab animals, thinking that in order to create a fear state so that the neurological action of fear could be studied, the test subjects would have to be somehow stimulated into that fear. And what the researchers didn't realize for a good, couple decades into the discipline was that they had already normalized to their environment from an initial state of fear. So basically the lab rats would be moved into a new cage, a new environment where everything was unfamiliar. And then they would have to get acquainted with that environment and map it as being safe. And then they were not afraid. But the initial response to any new stimulus is almost always fear. So fear is our fundamental psychological state. But we have a lot of safe structures around us as civilized humans, and so we don't realize how good we have it. So fear is first. Recognizing that for everyone, fear is first can give listeners, I think, a moment to sort of make space and acknowledge that the person they're speaking to, if they have a stutter, is very likely physiologically experiencing fear. That kind of like leads to the next one, which is time moves differently for people in experiencing different things. So as a vocal coach, I tell people, you have to trust. You can take time to take a breath. You can take time to sing a vowel. You can take time to think about the next thing you're going to do. You have to know that what feels like an eternity for you as you make these choices, most people don't even notice. They don't realize you took an extra second to do that thing. They don't realize you took a breath. Don't be, too anxious to fill up the time because you're in this heightened awareness state. So as a listener to a stutterer, I have to know, and I think this happens in the moment where it's unexpected, where I experience someone with a speech difference and I'm not anticipating it. And this is not the case from me and Benedict, because at this point I have familiarized myself with his speech patterns that I at this point basically just don't hear it. For someone who is meeting someone with a speech difference, that jarring sensation is basically you're being sucked into their psychological time, like instantly. And so that is actually, I think, an asset that someone who's listening to a stutter can actually be present with the stutterer in their experience of this time that is charged psychologically and emotionally. And so just being present and not looking like you need to get away or you need time needs to move faster can help with this fear is first problem too. And being willing to step out of your own experience of time into their experience of time for a moment. And then the final thing, we know it viscerally, and that is that facial expressions, kind of the emotions that are conveyed by facial expressions, map onto people's brainstems. They don't go through our conscious processing. We don't think about a facial expression that we're seeing and then have either an empathy or a fight or flight or an anxiety or a orienting reflex sort of response. That just goes right to our brainstem. And the clinical evidence for that is this thing known as blind sight, where people who have neurological damage that has caused blindness will still have a parasympathetic nervous system response to an angry face, even though they do not perceive anything visually, consciously. Their bodies just respond to the angry face. As a stutterer, you're talking to someone and they suddenly, they don't realize that they've been jarred into a different psychological perception of time and they have to respond to their sort of fear of that transition and respond to the perceived fear of the person that they're talking to, but they're doing this all visibly on their face. And that visible journey is mapping right onto the stutterer's brainstem, which is quite frankly, probably making the problem quite a lot worse. So recognize that fear is first for everybody, including you as a listener. Be willing to step into, in kind of a, maybe a really fast, agile way, into the psychological time of the person speaking. And then be aware of
the
what
fear is
you're
first
saying with your face.
Thing. Makes a lot of sense. And also the other two tips, especially because, you know, a lot of stutterers, we over and over again, we have to deal with the look that we get from people who may not realize that we're stuttering and it might be a shock to them. And so that facial expressions latching on to the other person's brainstem, it's just, it makes so much sense. And I'm wondering if you can talk more about the comparisons between stuttering and singing, because I've been a singer myself and that just really fascinates me.
And the analog to what it's like to learn to sing and to be a listener to somebody who's in a vulnerable place of vocalizing, it becomes a sort of shared curiosity of what the moment has. Not necessarily what's going to happen or what the motivations are, but what it's like to be together in that moment. So I think it's kind of more like a partnership. You enter into a partnership with a person speaking, and that's going to make for a better interaction on any number of levels. But I think those are three tips to make the partnership a better quality right from the beginning.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early! Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I think you treat listening to anyone and being in a conversation with anyone as something collaborative. Like when you meet somebody for the first time, or somebody that you don't know. There's this wall, and I think a lot of that. I mean, obviously we've been married for a long time, and so the wall is it's not there, but But some of the things I've seen you try to do, like if I'm speaking in front of an audience, is you model just with your body language, a kind of way of supportive and supportive supportive and open listening. And you also have a very acute awareness of what you're doing with your face most of the time, I think. Not all the time, but that's a different issue. But I think in particular when we're in front of an audience, because we do speak in front of an audience pretty often together, we give choir workshops and lectures and that kind of thing, and so you actually do a lot of modeling, and I think when people in the audience see that, I think just unconsciously they relax. Like, you try to listen to me like, well, with those three things that you said, but like that there isn't anything wrong. And I think that's that's the main thing that's really important, because, you know, like every stutterer has the experience of trying to work their way through a sentence, or they introduce themselves, or, you know, and just like you watch the face of the person in front of you, and they look like they've just seen a plane crash, and the listener becomes afraid, and then that causes the stutterer to become more afraid. And I think that's the import of the fear is first thing too, is to realize that, like, in this interaction, both parties are afraid. So you kind of have to, like, everybody has to be told it's okay. Like, the first thing I'll say is like, yeah, I'm Benedict, and you may also have realized that I'm stuttering. It's not your imagination. It's not a dream or some kind of weird, like, parallel universe that you've stumbled into. And, you know, so that, so just me being open, or it's like they have to be told it's okay, because a stutterer has to realize that their listener is afraid of them.
Well, I think you have to tell them that it's okay to notice it, because a lot of people, I think, work really hard to figure out how not to notice a difference,
or to look like they don't. Yeah, they want to look like, oh, I, you know, there is nothing wrong. But you can also see, I can immediately see people trying to pretend like they're like, I'm not stuttering.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work
at all.
My friends, they know, you know, just so you people out in podcast land, they know, you know. So it's nice to get it. It's nice to just be like, yeah, this is a thing. Now we can do other stuff together.
Right. So just to put it out in the open. And that's what a lot you see in speech therapy too, is like you're taught to advertise. And but I think it's also really interesting, because we do this co speaking thing, and so there's the stutterer, and then there's the non-stutterer, and here's how a non-stutterer should listen to a stutterer.
Benedict and Talia, thank you so much for those tips, and just having this conversation around someone who stutters and someone who doesn't stutter, and really talking about some of the physiological and psychological things that are happening in a conversation, and how a lot of the reactions we have as humans are really tied to how our brain works. And so it's really no one's fault, both on the stutter side and the listener's side, to have these types of reactions. And I think this conversation is bringing a lot of awareness and openness, because I can, there's a lot of emotion and people can feel guilty about, you know, responding a certain way. And as stutters, we can feel a lot of shame about, like, why can't we speak this way? But learning the science and being aware, I think, is just, we can get that much closer to acceptance and understanding.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's something we've had to learn too. I mean, it's like, yeah, like, I know it's hard to, it can be hard to it can be hard to listen to somebody who stutters, especially if it's something you haven't experienced before. So it's also like, I try to tell people it's okay with me that you are having uncomfortable reactions. It's not going to upset me. Like, I usually make a joke about it, and like, I actually just do it deliberately to get attention. And that always gets a laugh. I've tried to come up with some new material. I've used that line a lot, but, but then I also like have said before, like, hey, if like I get stuck on a word for a particularly long time and you're feeling you're feeling a little bit antsy, why don't you get up and go get a cup of coffee? And by the time I get back, I'll be done with the word, and we'll be able to move on. So it's also like, I mean, I've had interactions where I've spoken in front of an audience and like, especially like there was one in particular was a group of high schoolers, which is in some way the most kind of terrifying audience, for me. I really enjoy speaking to high schoolers, but, there was one time in particular where it's an audience of high schoolers and, somebody just involuntarily started like started to laugh uncontrollably, but it's like, but it makes everybody in the room super uncomfortable. So I had to figure out kind of on my beat. I forget exactly what I said, but I basically used the opportunity to just make a joke about my stuttering, and that helped. It relieved the tension, at least I think. It's still super uncomfortable, but it's like we have to not pretend that it's not happening, and we have to not pretend that it's not odd or strange when it's not something you've experienced before. So that's also something I think that, I mean, I try, I mean, something in some way, it's in some way something that only I can do, but in speaking about how Tali is an advocate or an ally, I like the word that you use, how she's an ally, you know, like she's the first to laugh at my jokes when I make a joke about stuttering. So she's also modeling for them that it's okay to laugh at this joke.
Yeah. There's a timing for me. There's a timing about how to respond to a particular statement at the point at which, this is interesting to kind of articulate. So if Benedict is making a point, the sort of like punchline of the point, not just a joke, but just some sort of declamatory statement, when the point of it comes a little bit after the block, and that's usually, or whatever this speech difference is at that time, that's usually when he's trying to add emphasis and articulate a thing, is often when the pressure sort of increases and it's kind of more likely. So sometimes I notice people get really distracted by the block or the workaround, and then when the punchline or the point hits, they're still trying to process the speech difference that they heard, and they don't realize that the point has happened. And so partly I just don't notice the speech difference happening, and I'm more able to just be like, oh yeah, that's cooler. But I started doing that very deliberately as a way to help people get out of their being distracted by the extra sounds and be able to just kind of shelve them away and be like, oh yeah, no, this is the point. Cool. And then it keeps the flow of the interaction going in a way that were they just left to have to process everything they heard, they would be stuck on trying to make sense of that, you know, that particular speech
and
difference.
And that's a wrap
that
for part one of
so I try to time those
two-part conversation with Benedict and Talia.
Sensitively.
Thank you so much for listening. And please stay tuned for part two. It's going to be super interesting. If you thought this was really interesting, just wait. We dive more into Benedict's story and something that I've never had a conversation with on this podcast before, but how his ADHD diagnosis really helped him come to terms with his stutter and more about those intersectionalities. And that's it for this episode of Proud Stutter. This episode of Proud Stutter was produced and edited by me, Maya Chupkov. Our music was composed by Augusto Deniz, and our artwork by Mara Ezekiel and Noah Chupkov. If you have an idea or want to be part of a future episode, visit us at www.proudstutter.com. And if you like the show, you can leave us a review wherever you are listening to this podcast. Want to leave us a voicemail? Check out our show notes for the number to call in. More importantly, tell your friends to listen too. Until we meet again, thanks for listening. Be proud and be you.
Save over $200 when you book weekly stays with Vrbo this winter. If you haven't seen your college besties since, well, college, you need a week to catch up in a snowy cabin. Take a week-long vacation and save over $200. Book now at Vrbo.com.
What if you could spot cancer recurrence more than 2 years earlier than imaging? Introducing the new Oncodetect molecular residual disease test for solid tumors. See how you can identify even subtle signs of cancer and learn more about the new test from Exact Sciences at Oncodetect.com.